Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
Well, hey, good morning, and welcome to Northeast Christian Church today. I am thrilled you're here, whether you're in the room, whether you're joining us online. I got friends in Cincinnati who their church canceled because of the snow coming, so they're joining us online. I got friends in Florida because that's just where they go during this time of the year. Lucky you, they're joining us online. So whether you're here, whether you're there, we're pumped that you've joined with us, and welcome. Today, we get to kick off our first series of 2019. It's a series that we're calling Living My Best Life. Living My Best Life. Subtitle, A 21-Day Challenge to Purpose. And as your pastor, if I could ask of you to take one New Year's resolution this year, or just do one thing for your church in this January, then I would ask you to take the 21-Day Challenge with us. All right, you'll hear more about it as we walk through the next few weeks, but all you need to know today is that before you leave today, pull out your phone, download the app, all right, and then underneath this sermon graphic in the app is housed our 21-day challenge. Basically, every day for the next 21 days, we're going to ask you to take 10 to 15 minutes to read or to reflect or to write or to do, and I promise you this. If you stick with the program and stick with the plan and walk through this with us, then at the end of these 21 days, you may very well just be living your best life. Or at the very least, you'll be living a better life. And that's good news. Now, I can promise you this. You know what your best life is? Your best life is an on-purpose life. An on-purpose life. And no one has ever lived an on-purpose life, off-purpose, or on accident. Now, I know that sounds kind of obvious, but let's just call it like it is. These are the two paths that we tend to lean into most naturally. We tend to live our life off purpose for the wrong purpose, right? Or we live our life completely on accident, just drifting from decision to decision, desire to desire, impulse to impulse, day to day. What a waste of a life. No, your life is worth more than that. And your life is more powerful than that. So I want you to live it. I want you to live your best life. I want you to live an on-purpose life. Now, check this out. Here's what I know. As soon as some of you in the room heard that over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about purpose, immediately you were like, a series on purpose. Because that's the way you feel about purpose. It's boring to you. It's like this impractical, nebulous, fuzzy, sort of, you know, philosophical idea. That's for pastors and philosophers. But you don't think about purpose because you're too busy living your life. Well, check this out. If that's you, I just want you to know that the only reason you think purpose is impractical or fuzzy or just sort of this concept that you should ignore, it's way out there, is because whoever explained this to you the last time did a really, really bad job of it. Because I think purpose is powerful, perhaps the most powerful thing you can tap into. So today, to start our conversation, let's just start from the foundation ground level and let's define purpose. All right, dictionary.com will do for me, nothing fancy. According to the dictionary, this is what purpose is. Purpose is the reason for which something exists. Will you repeat that after me? Purpose is the reason for which something exists. Very good, all right? So let's play a game. Check this out. Does anybody know what this thing right here is? This is a hair dryer, all right? And for what reason does this thing exist? Okay, I wouldn't know from personal experience, but I've heard that these are used to dry hair. Very good. Above average audience, 9 a.m., of course. 11 a.m., we might need some help. Okay, now, check this out. Does anybody know what this is? This is a pen. For what reason does this exist? To write. Man, you guys are smart. Does anybody know what this is? It's a toaster. For what reason does this exist? Yeah, to toast. It's in the name. Now, let's move on to some harder ones because you guys are really nailing it right here. This right here is a picture of what? A mosquito. And for what reason does this thing exist? Yeah, right. God, we don't know. and we're going to need some explaining. No, I'll tell you what my theory is. My theory is that mosquitoes exist to give us a glimpse of what hell will be like. There are things on this earth that give us a glimpse of heaven, ice cream. Then there's things on this earth that give us a glimpse of hell, mosquitoes. But this is a bone I got to pick with God someday because I got no idea what the point of mosquitoes are. But I'm off point. So you get my point, right? Anytime someone says, what's the purpose of that thing? What's the purpose of that thing? What they're really asking is, for what reason does that thing exist? Now, one more while we're playing our game. All right. Does anyone know what this is or this is? Okay. This is us. This is you. And for what reason do you exist? You know, if we were taking our definition from earlier, then your purpose and my purpose is the reason for which I exist, right? But that question, my friends, is a little bit more difficult and a little bit more complicated to figure out, isn't it? It's a little bit more complicated than Mr. Hairdryer over here. And you know why it's more complicated? Because you and I, unlike a hairdryer, pen, or toaster, have been given this thing called free will. We've been given this thing called moral agency. You and I have the power to choose the reason for which we exist, our purpose in life, our direction in life. You get to choose. What a gift. And let me tell you something, we all choose. We all choose a purpose. Again, some of you, when you heard this series was on purpose, you were, you know, just because it's boring to you. But even if you never think about purpose, even if you think it's impractical and boring, I want you to know you've chosen a purpose for your life. You have. Whether it's on purpose or on accident, you have chosen a purpose. You've chosen a direction for your life. There's some bullseye, some end, some goal, some why that is forming your decisions every day that serves as the filter for how you spend your time, the filter for how you spend your money, the filter for how you treat different people. We get to choose a purpose as human beings, what dignity that gives us. But I tell you what, we all choose. And I wonder what you've chosen. Now, this points out for me one of the great problems of purpose when it comes to human beings, which is my next point. Most of us don't choose our purpose on purpose, do we? We just sort of drift along rather than direct our life in a specific direction towards a specific end, towards a specific purpose. And again, how sad is that? What a waste of a human life. Do you realize how powerful a human life is? I've seen human lives create inventions or develop innovations that have changed the world. I've seen human lives create art that has inspired thousands. I've seen human lives write and then deliver speeches, words that awaken the soul of a generation. I've seen human lives change lives, save lives. I've seen human lives change a family, change a neighborhood, change a city, change a country. I've seen human lives face down injustice or solve some of the world's greatest problems. I've seen human lives change the trajectory of history, and you have a human life. What a sad thing it would be for you to just waste it on accident. But that's where so many of us live. We drift rather than direct our lives. Now, here's the reality, though. I know why you do that, and you know why. Because it's much easier to drift. It's so much easier to drift rather than choose a direction for your life. Because, see, you know what direction demands of you? Direction demands reflection and wisdom and strategy. Direction demands self-control, discipline, and sacrifice. Direction demands persistence when the going gets tough. And who wants to do that? Especially when you can just choose to drift rather than direct. Because you know what drifting demands? All drifting demands is for you to do whatever you want to do. Drifting demands impulse. Drifting demands being in touch with your desires in the moment and living moment by moment by moment, doing whatever the heck you want to do. And again, what an unworthy purpose for something as powerful as a human life. Is that what you want written on your tombstone someday? Is that what you want said about you in your eulogy? Today we've gathered to celebrate Tyler. Rest in peace. He lived a life of unchecked desire. He was self-absorbed, self-centered, egotistical. He did whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, without a care in the world for the needs and desires of others. Let's live on and remember his legacy by carrying forward his ways. Some of you are smiling, right? Because it's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And yet, if we're honest, and our friends were honest someday, that's what would be said of some of us at our funeral, wouldn't it? Because we're drifters. Now, check this out. Here's the good news today. You don't have to drift through life. And here's my challenge for you today. You can't afford to drift through life. Because if you drift rather than direct your life, you risk living less than your best life. And I want you to live your best life. Back to our game earlier. Okay, this is a hairdryer, right? And hair dryers dry hair. But let's just say, okay, what if we were to try to use this hair dryer for the purpose of a pen? What if I tried to use this hair dryer to, you know, write a note, thank you note to you later? How do you think that would go? Not very good. And yet, no wonder. No wonder some of your lives don't make sense. You're a hair dryer trying to write thank you notes. What if I were to try to use this hair dryer for the purpose of this toaster right here? How would that go? Very slowly, right? Like it would warm the bread. It would never toast the bread though, right? Because it's a hair dryer. And no wonder. No wonder. No wonder some of you are living less than your potential. Because you're a hair dryer trying to be a toaster. Hey, how about this one? What if I were to use this hair dryer here, like I were to plug it in and use this hair dryer as a water filtration system? How would that go? Not very good. No wonder. No wonder some of your lives feel like you're short-circuiting. You're a hair dryer trying to filter water. Don't you see? Don't you see? You were created for something. You exist for something. And I want you to discover it. Because just on the other side of purpose is your best life. Now, perhaps the most epic story ever told about purpose is one found in the Hebrew scriptures in a book called Esther. Ever read Esther before? It's named for its hero. But at the beginning of the book, it doesn't begin with its hero. Rather, it begins with really the antithesis of its hero, a king named King Xerxes. The story is set 2,500 years ago and begins in verse 1, giving you a character profile of this great king. Pick up with me in Esther 1, verse 1. It says, "This happened in the days of Xerxes, the same Xerxes who ruled over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia." Basically, they're telling you he's the ruler of the known world at the time. And in those 127 provinces, part of his conquered people were the people of Israel, the people of Esther. Now, when you're a man that powerful, do you know what you do when you come into power? Well, Xerxes shows us. Next verse, it says, "In the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his officials and ministers. And while he displayed the great wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and pomp of his majesty for many days, 180 days in all." Now, did you see that? 180 days. You know what he did when he came to power? He threw a six-month-long kegger. A six-month-long hangover. Because that's what you do when you run the world, right? Now, what do you do after a six-month-long rager? Well, okay, I'll tell you. This is what Xerxes does. He says, "When these days were completed, the king gave for all the people in the capital, both great and small, a banquet lasting for 7 days. So we move from one party straight into the next." Now, even though the second party's a little bit shorter, it was not any less extravagant The scriptures tell us that it was held in the court of the king's palace. And there were white cotton curtains and blue hangings tied with, I mean, just try to imagine this, tied with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rings and marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry and marble and mother of pearl and colored stones. Drinks were served in golden goblets, goblets of different kinds, and the royal wine was lavished according to the bounty of the king. Drinking was by flagons, without restraint. And check out what it says next. It says, next slide. For the king had given orders to all the officials of his palace to do as each one desired. To do as each one desired. And there you have it. There you have it. The manifesto of the drifter. Do as you desire. Impulse to impulse, moment to moment, decision to decision, desire to desire. Will you repeat that after me? Do as you desire. Now you know what the scriptures teach us? The scriptures teach us that if we don't choose our purpose, then that is the purpose that will choose us. The scriptures teach us that desire is the default direction of the drifter. If you don't choose the direction of your life, you'll just kind of naturally go towards your desires, moment by moment. In fact, from the very beginning of the human story in Genesis, this is what we see. In Genesis chapter 1, God creates human beings. And he actually gives us our first purpose statement. I don't know if you ever read this before, but it's very powerful. Genesis 1:27, it said, God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature in his image. He created them male and female. And God blessed them, saying, prosper, reproduce, fill the earth, take charge, be responsible for the fish in the sea and the birds in the air, for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. Or in other words, we are commanded by God to be his agents of peace and prosperity in the world. Our purpose. But then comes the choice, right? You know the story. Genesis 3, the snake slithers in. He offers Eve the forbidden fruit. And when he does, this is what he tells her. And this is a direct quote. He says, if you eat the fruit, then you'll be just like God. And there's the choice. There's the difference. The difference between our true purpose and what one pastor I know calls our shadow mission or our shadow purpose. You can either serve your God or you can be your God. But the choice is yours, and we all choose. And it's pretty clear what Xerxes chose, right? Do as you desire. I'll do me, you do you. Now, interestingly enough, as you read on in Xerxes' story in chapter 1, because of his, you know, do as you desire ethic, he gets in a fight with his wife, Vashti. It's kind of funny how it all plays out. Basically, King Xerxes gets to the end of his 7-day party. And all of a sudden, he's like, you know what would be really cool to show the boys? My trophy wife. Because Vashti was very beautiful. So he sends a message over to Vashti, who's hosting her own party for the woman, for the women. And he says, hey, I want you to come over here and parade around. Now, could you imagine how embarrassing this would have been? How humiliating it would have been to Vashti, who's hosting her own thing? Hey, honey, I want you to come over, and I want to parade you around like a slab of meat in front of the bros who have been doing keg stands and telling war stories for the past 7 days. I'm going to tell you, Vashti was probably not very excited about that. In fact, she refuses him. She says, that's okay, honey. That's okay. I think I'll wash the dishes, reorganize my sock drawer, anything other than that. But I will not be coming to the party. And when she refuses, it enrages King Xerxes so much because she's coming up against his ethic, his purpose, do as you desire, that he gets his officials together and he makes a new law. And you know what the new law says? It says, Vashti, if you don't want to come before me, then guess what? I can now command for you to never come before me. You can't quit because you're fired. Oh, the maturity of this ruler, right? Now, as his story rolls on, what you find is he gets rid of his wife, but all of a sudden he gets lonely. And he wants a new wife. So in Esther chapter 2, his officials come up with a new idea. This is what they said. It says, then the king's servants who attended him said, we got an idea. Let beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king. And let the king point commissioners in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in the capital citadel of Susa, under the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. Let their cosmetic treatments be given them, and let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. And this pleased the king. So he did it. Now, this was 2,500 years ago. These were barbaric days. And I know that we have progressed so far beyond them. We are so more morally superior and enlightened compared to those people way back then. But I want you to try to wrap your mind around what this beauty wife competition looked like. So imagine if women were brought together, beautiful women from all over, to win the affection of one bachelor. And national attention was on it. And the women did literally anything they possibly could to win the affection of the king. They stroked his ego. They slept with him if they had to. They formed alliances with friends, pushed out and attacked their enemies. Anything. They did anything to win. So at the end, they could be the one who was named his wife. Now, could you even begin to imagine something like that? I mean, how dramatic. What a stupid way to pick a wife. To which some of you are like, that's exactly why I watch it. Okay, but you get my point. Now, as the story rolls forward, we're introduced to our hero, Esther. We don't know much about her at this point. What we do know is that Esther is a Jew. She's an orphan. Her Jewish cousin, Mordecai, had adopted her and become her caretaker. And we also know that Esther was very, very beautiful. And so she won the competition and became the queen. The queen of the most powerful ruler in the world. Now, I was bantering back and forth with some friends about this last night, but at this point, in my opinion, Esther is not the hero that we would like yet. At worst, she's a compromiser. Because in order to win this competition, she would have had to compromise many of her Jewish values. The scriptures tell us that she hid her Jewish identity. The scriptures tell us that she ate unkosher food. The scripture tells us that she would have had to violate her sexual purity, marry a pagan king, many things that were against the Jewish law and Torah. At worst, she's a compromiser. And at best, she's a victim of circumstances that she's too afraid to stand up to. You see, you may be thinking to yourself, Tyler, take it easy on Esther. If she would have refused to enter the competition or go forward with it, she could have been killed. Maybe. But that did not stop Daniel from resisting a pagan king and being thrown in the lion's den. That did not stop Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from resisting a pagan king and being thrown into the fiery furnace. So Esther is no Xerxes, but Esther has yet to find her true purpose. She's not quite the hero we want her to be. Well, not quite yet, but she does have the crown. Now, as her tenure as queen begins, through a series of unfortunate events, her people, the Jewish people, are sentenced to death. Mass genocide. Basically, the right-hand man of the king, King Xerxes, named Haman, had it out for the Jews. He was the second most powerful man in the kingdom, extremely wealthy. And Mordecai, again, Esther's cousin and caretaker, Mordecai violated his dignity. So you know what Haman did? Haman looked at Mordecai and he said, hey, listen, I'm a bad dude, all right? And if you mess with me, I don't just take you out. I take your mama out. I take your daddy out. I take the kids out. I take your aunts and uncles, your grandparents, your neighbors, everybody you knew. I take them all out so that everybody knows not to mess with me. And that's what happens. Haman comes to Xerxes. They develop this plan. Again, remember, they don't know that Esther's a Jew at this point because she has been hiding her ethnic identity, and so they sentence the Jewish people to mass extermination. A Holocaust, if you will. Esther chapter 3, verse 12. It says, it was written in the name of King Xerxes and sealed with the king's rings. Letters were sent by couriers to all the provinces, giving orders to destroy, kill, annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children. And in this moment of desperation and despair, Mordecai knows that there is only one hope for his people. There is only one person in the kingdom who has the influence, who has the power, who has the ear of the king and can potentially save the Jewish people and their future. It's Esther. And so Mordecai sends a secret message to Esther, and he tells her about how everything has transpired. And then he begs her, please, Esther, please, go before the king. Ask him for his mercy. Tell him he's wrong. And when he says this, immediately Esther has this sort of visceral response. She's like, heck no, are you kidding me? Why would I go tell the king that? That's a suicide mission. This is what she says to Mordecai, Esther chapter 4. She says, all the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there's one law. All alike are to be put to death. She explains, it's capital punishment for the person who shows up before the king unsummoned, especially if they show up and say, hey, I've got to question some of your decisions, king. You remember what happened last to his last queen when she questioned his decisions? Oh, and then Esther reveals to Mordecai another interesting tidbit of information. She says, also, I myself have not been called to come to the king for 30 days. And isn't it interesting? When you're someone like Xerxes who's driven by desire, people just become toys to you. Objects for you to objectify. They become toys that once they get old, you just put them on the shelf or throw them in the box and forget about them. Now you see what Esther's saying here? She's saying, look, not only is this mission unlikely to succeed, but it is very likely to end in my death. And in that moment, most friends would have let up and said, okay, I get it, Esther. I get it. But Mordecai is not most friends. Rather, he pushes in even further. And what he says to Esther next are some of the most jaw-dropping, hair-raising, heart-pounding, epic, dangerous, mission-centric, purpose-driven words that any loved one has ever spoken to another. He sends message back to Esther and he says, yes, you may die, but who knows? Who knows? Perhaps, just perhaps, you have come to royal dignity for such a time as this. Perhaps, just perhaps, I don't know how you got all the wealth. I'm not sure if God approves how you got all the power in the king's ear. I don't know. But perhaps, perhaps you got it for this moment right here and right now. Now, I love the story of Esther. Do you see what happened right here? See what happened? God, through Mordecai, smacked her upside the head with purpose in an undeniable way that she cannot ignore. And I love her story because her story is my story. And her story is your story. Her story is the human story because all of us, at different points in our lives, sometimes louder, sometimes quieter, but all of us come face to face with purpose. And we're posed with the question, are you going to serve your purposes or are you going to serve a higher purpose? Are you going to choose to serve God or are you going to choose to be your God? It's up to you. Will you drift towards desire or will you direct your life? What will you choose? You know, some of you right now are in the midst of an Esther moment. Right now. Like God has smacked you upside the head with purpose, and you know it. You know it. The decision, or at least the question of purpose, is so clear to you. In fact, some of you are like, did my wife send you an email and tell you to preach about this week? Because this is where you're at right now. And you've got a decision to make. And you know what I found? I found that a lot of times it's at the two extremes of life where the purpose question gets the loudest. Either when you hit rock bottom or you're at the top of the mountain and you have achieved your dreams. Then all of a sudden, the purpose question gets louder and louder. Okay, so when you hit rock bottom, you got nowhere else to turn but God, right? And so in that moment, it becomes very clear upon who you must lean. But the same thing's true whenever you get to the top of the mountain. What you'll find, some of you, when you achieve your dreams, is that when you get there, you got nowhere else to turn but God. It's interesting. You'll spend your entire life trying to achieve those dreams you got. You'll spend your entire life trying to get to that pay bracket or earn that position or earn that influence or once I get this house or get in this neighborhood or get to this age or have this many kids or whatever, right? Whatever that is, once I get there, you've convinced yourself that finally then your life will be full of joy and satisfaction. But then you get there and you realize it's not as dreamy as you once dreamed it would be. In fact, for some of you, achieving your dreams is crushing to your dreams. And you realize in that moment, if my dreams can't satisfy me, then I've only got one place left to turn. Now look, if that's you today, I want to issue you a challenge. Perhaps, just perhaps, you're there in this moment right now. And you've earned all the money you've earned, or you've got all the power that you've got, or you've gained all the influence that you've gained, or you've achieved all the success that you have achieved for such a time as this. Perhaps this is your Esther moment. Now, for others of us in this room, you're not in an Esther moment right now. But your life's going pretty good. You know, for folks like you, I just want to let you know that a pretty good life may be the very worst thing to happen to a human being. A pretty good life that just slowly progresses forward. Because you know what? As long as your life is pretty good and slowly progressing forward, there's always a carrot stick kind of out in front of you where you're thinking to yourself, man, if I just get a little bit more, then I'll be where I want to be, right? And so you just sort of drift through life. Okay, some of you young people in here, in this room now, teenagers, you've got a pretty good life. And so you're just drifting. You know what the interesting thing about your teen years is? When you're like 14, 15, 16, 17, all of a sudden, for the first time in your life, the purpose questions get real. You start hearing these questions like, who am I? Why am I here? What do I exist for? Like, where am I going to go to college? And what am I going to do with my life? Like, and how am I going to live out my faith? Am I going to live out my faith? All these purpose-driven questions hit you. But when you're a teenager, you don't want to think about those. You don't think about purpose. You don't want to think about the future. You want to think about now. You want to think about tonight. And what are my friends doing? And what are we going to eat? And is she going to be there, right? Is she going to be there? That's the sum of your life at this point. But I just want to challenge you. If you can get yourself outside the moment and beyond your immediate desires and begin to think about where your life is heading and where it should be heading, you will put yourself 15 years ahead of your peers. Can I just challenge you? Don't drift. Even if things are pretty good, don't drift. No, it's interesting. When you move out of your teen years into like your early 20s, I call these your transition years. Right? And it's really, really easy in those years to drift as well because everything is happening and changing so quickly in your life. It's like graduate, college, pick a major, graduate, grad school, first house, first job, first pet, first wife, first kid, like boom, 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 boom. Like life is just moving forward and it's moving forward fast. And who's got time to think about the future when everything is changing so quickly in the present? But then it happens. All of a sudden you're 28, and you're not the CEO like you knew you would be when you graduated college at 28. And you begin to wonder, is this where I should be? Fascinating statistic on millennials. And again, I'm a millennial, you are my people, but check this out. It's said that millennials, somewhere between 4 to 7 times before the age of 30, switch jobs and cities. Why? Why such bounciness, discontent? Could it be that we have a crisis of purpose? Now, when you move out of those transition years, then you move into midlife. And I think it is just as easy in midlife to just sort of drift past your purpose. Okay, so you know what I call the midlife years? They're not the transition years. They're the flatline years. Flatline. Because it's kind of like, you know, in your transition years, things are moving fast, you know? It's like, oh, graduate, job. And then all of a sudden you get to like 40 and it's just like, job. And it starts looking the same. Married. Now, when things start looking the same, you can start to get bored with it or discontent with it. So you know what you do in midlife? You have a midlife crisis. And you try to recreate the sparks of your transition years by doing things you did in your transition years, right? Like getting new stuff, new car, new house, new job, new wife, new kid, new look, new me. Doesn't matter. You try to recreate that spark, all the while ignoring the root of the problem. You haven't answered the purpose question. And then all of a sudden you get to the end. You get to your retirement years, nearing retirement or into retirement. And at this point, you can't ignore the purpose question anymore, because you start thinking about legacy. You start thinking about what you're leaving behind. But for some of you, you're there in those retirement years, and you're thinking to myself, man, I wish I'd have heard this sermon 40 years ago, because for me now, it's too late. Can I just encourage you, no, better yet, challenge you, my older brothers and sisters in this room, it is not too late. It's never too late. And perhaps, just perhaps, you're at this point right now with all this wisdom and experience, with all these relationships that you've built, this robust relational network. Perhaps you're at the top of the org chart. Perhaps you have this discretionary money or discretionary time. Perhaps you have all this influence and all this power in this moment right now, for this moment right now, for such a time as this. It's not too late. It's never too late to choose to live your life on purpose. And for those of you who aren't there yet, it's never too early either. So as we close, I want to give you a few questions to think through this week, because I believe these questions will help those of you who want to begin to get your life on purpose. Purpose. And I'm telling you, your best life is an on-purpose life. So here's where you got to start. Question number one. You got to start by honestly asking yourself, what am I actually living for? Like, actually, not what do I want to be living for, not what do I wish I would be living for, not what do I say I'm living for, or what the Bible says I'm living for, or what I tell my church friends I'm living for, because we're really good at quoting Bible verses to our church friends. No, what am I actually living for right now? Now, I tell you, if you don't know the answer to that question, then I appreciate your honesty, and I want to go ahead and call it like it is. If you don't know the answer, then you're probably drifting. You're probably drifting. And that's okay, because this series is for you, and we're going to change everything over the next 3 weeks. But I want you to acknowledge, you're probably drifting. Now, if you do know the answer to that question, then here's my challenge for you. I don't trust you. I don't trust me either, okay? I don't trust us, because we're really, really good at deceiving ourselves. We're really, really good at saying we're a lot better than we are. So here's what I want you to do. For those of you who think you know, I want you to take a purpose audit this week, an honest purpose audit. Here's how you do it. First, I want you to go and I want you to ask, what do my most honest last 10% loved ones say about my purpose? All right, and you know who these loved ones are. Not your peacemaker friends. Not your enabler friends who, when you do something stupid, say, you go, girl. Okay, we all need some friends like that who are just encouragers, but we also need some friends who are Mordecais, truth speakers. So I want you to go to those Mordecai, most honest, speak the last 10% loved ones, and I want you to ask them, be honest with me, what do I actually live for? And then brace yourself, because it might hurt, and then thank them when they're honest. Next, I want you to ask yourself, what does my time say? Because your time is a finite resource, but it is the most important resource you have. Because your time is your life. You want to know where your life is heading? Look at where your time is invested. And then I want you to ask yourself, what does my money say? Because Jesus once said, where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. So if you want to see what has your heart, then look at your bank account. Now, I know some of you are trying to write these down. Some of you are like taking pictures of the back screen right now. Here's the good news. You don't need to remember any of these. You can just reflect on these right now. If you get online today, download the app and take our 21-day purpose, because all of these will be housed in one of the days this week for you to reflect on. And so will this last question, which I believe is the most important question of them all. And I want you to spend extra time on. If you don't answer any of the questions on the screen, I want you to answer the last one. Once you figure out what you're actually living for, I then want you to ask yourself this. What should I? What should I live for? What should I be living for? And I want you to take extra special time to answer this. Because you see, while the first few questions define reality, this last question will help you define your purpose. And I don't want you to live off purpose. I don't want you to live on accident. No, I want you to live an on-purpose life, because your best life is an on-purpose life. What should I live for? You know what's on the other side of that question? That question right there is a window into your purpose. And on the other side of purpose is a life of meaning, a life of intention, a life of direction, a life of satisfaction, a life of joy, a life lived exactly as God created you to live. And I want you to find that. So what am I actually living for? You cannot afford to drift any longer. You cannot afford to drift any longer. You cannot afford to drift any longer. Because if you drift rather than direct your life, you risk living a less than your best life. So what should I live for? What will you choose? What will Esther choose? Well, it's at that point that we will pick up next week, when I hope you come back for part two of Living My Best Life. Let me pray right now. Heavenly Father, awaken us. Just begin to awaken some of the empty, unsatisfied, drifting hearts in this room right now to your purpose for us, and creating us a hunger over the next 21 days to find that out and live that out. It is in Jesus' most powerful name that we pray. Amen.
Thank you so much, Tyler. Wow, we all need a purpose. We all need a purpose. Download the app, take the 21-day challenge, and see what God has in store for you. You won't regret it. You know, some of you all have made 2 weeks in a row, New Year's resolution. This is your second week. Great job. If you are new here, we'd love to meet you in the middle of the lobby and get to know your story, answer any questions you have. And if you need to pray with anyone, we have elders and staff in the fireside room right out these doors ready to pray with you. Thank you so much. Let's make it 3 weeks in a row next weekend. We'll see you next weekend. Bye-bye.